Call from mom. Answer it. Call silenced.
Instacart knows nothing gets between you and the game. That's why they make ordering from your couch easy. Stock up today and get all your groceries for the week delivered in as fast as 30 minutes without missing a minute of the game.
You have 47 new voicemails.
Download the app to get free delivery on your first three orders while supplies last. Minimum $10 per order. Additional terms apply.
That stretch at the end of the game where it's tied at 111, just the job that Kyrie did. Could you speak to, maybe that was maybe one of the better stretches we've seen from him and the team.
Well, he made really good plays. We were just trying to get different matchups off the pick and roll. And then at the end, they were doing what we call fly switching and bringing up who they wanted to bring up with the ball. And he just beat his guy and made plays for Al. So he did a great job. Those shots were huge. And then the playmaking at the very end. Our defense was really good at the end. But, hey, that's a tough team, and you have to play a full 48 to have a chance to win. We knew even with that lead that nothing was going to last forever. They're just too good of a team.
Yeah, Coach, you just mentioned it, the way the defense was flying around. Was that something that was really needed at this point in this particular game?
Yeah, I mean, I think the most encouraging part of the night to me was we started out down 20-8 and we responded. I thought, you know, the bench, obviously Gordon scored, but I thought Terry Rozier turned the game around, kind of turned the environment around, to be honest. I thought that his energy lifted everyone around, from our team to the building. I just thought it was contagious, and the way he picked up the ball, a couple of the plays he made, the spirit he played with, I thought really got us going in the right direction, and everybody followed suit from there on out.
Hey, Coach, just a follow-up on Kyrie. He's always shown the ability to score at a high level, obviously, but the playmaking and the scoring at the same time on the same night, could you speak to just how he's kind of grown in that particular area of finding that balance between those two?
You know what? When he was he's always been a special playmaker. He's always been able to play with the ball and make plays for himself and others. He's had that gift since I've seen him at the under 18 tryouts at the USA basketball. That's always been something he could do. He did it more than people talked about in Cleveland. And, you know, he's a threat to make the right shot. Obviously, he draws a lot of attention, and he usually can, you know, make the right read off of that. He's a great passer with great touch on his passes.
Brad, I mean, the last three games were tough, but tonight, did you see more of what you want to see more consistently? And can you figure out how to get this team to play more consistently that way?
Yeah, I mean, I think that's the biggest thing. I think the best part of tonight, as I said, was we responded to adverse stretches in a game twice. Start of the game, down 20-8, and then when they came back and took the lead, went up by 4, we responded. And that has not been done enough at enough of a level for us to be what we want to be. And so I guess we can talk about consistency after a few months of doing it.
The Celtics coach Brad Stevens right there, and we'll continue to play some of the sound from the post game tonight, because some of the sound is simply outstanding. Coming up a little bit later in the program, we'll hear from Kyrie Irving. Kyrie said tonight, "We've just got to be more consistent, and once that happens, we'll run over everybody in this league. I can guarantee it." So it was good to see heart from this team tonight. It was nice to see some confidence from this team tonight. But ultimately, Celtics fans, you're driving home from the game. I need to know what it means. I need to know, is this finally that jump-off point that we've all been waiting for, or is this simply another false start? Is this simply another tease for Celtics fans where the Celtics team essentially shows, yeah, guess what? Danny Ainge, he assembled a team that is capable of beating the best of the best in the NBA, but he did not assemble a team that's capable of showing up on a night-in and night-out basis. Are we finally past that point, or is this just another example of what this Celtics team could be, but ultimately is not. It is Sports Radio, WEI. My name is Patrick Gilroy. This is Late Night. There is room for you guys tonight at 617-779-7937. You're driving home from the Garden where the Celtics win tonight against the Raptors 117-108, a career high. 18 assists from Kyrie Irving. Aaron Baines back on the court tonight. What does that mean? That means that Al Horford, he gets a slide back to his natural power forward position. And what happens next? Al Horford, he has his best game of the season. We're talking about it with you guys at 617-779-7937. Let's get back out to these calls. Let's go to Andrew. Andrew's in Haverhill. Andrew, you're next up here on WEI.
Hey, what's up, Gilroy? What? Long time no talk.
I know. What's going on with that, man?
Nothing. I'm usually calling in about the Bruins, but tonight I'm calling in about the Celtics. That was such a great game. At what point, I may be a little prisoner of the moment right now, but at what point do we say that Kyrie Irving is the best Celtic since Larry Bird? I mean, come on. He's better than Pierce. He just is. I love Paul Pierce, but he's a better player talent-wise. And KG, we got, like, in the later half of his prime. Well, the guy, he's just incredible. I've never seen anybody like him.
Andrew, you got to say this, though. I have to say this anyways. Doing this show last night, doing the show the last couple of nights, we took dozens of phone calls from Celtics fans that wanted Kyrie Irving traded because
most people are dumb.
Well, I'm just saying, you know, Paul Pierce, earlier on in his career, we took those calls as well. Don't forget, I've been doing Celtics radio for 19 years, and I can tell you that for years, Celtics
got traded.
No, I'm telling you, Celtics fans wanted him traded in the early to mid 2000s. After Paul Pierce pulled that crap after losing to the Pacers in the 05 playoffs, I think it was, where he wrapped his head in a fake sort of head wrap and, you know, said that he was injured. It was embarrassing to
the
Celtics.
Weird moment.
He has
the head wrap. He had the wheelchair.
Yeah, the wheel. There is. Do you know what the wheelchair incident was?
No, I don't know. What do you mean?
Okay,
what
here's the thing, and I'll say we talked about this a couple of years ago when I was on ESPN Radio, but I'll tell the story here, and it's available online. I think it was The Ringer that had the story, but it's sort of become NBA folklore and NBA legend. So the rumor is Paul pooped his pants, and
oh my God.
Yeah. So the rumor is Paul pooped his pants, and essentially, and he was wearing the white uniforms. So the only way that he could sort of hide it was to fake that injury and get the wheelchair out. And
yeah, well, then he's Robert De Niro from that acting performance. on that. I mean, that was unbelievable. So, I have one last point for you.
Yep.
You know Stuart Greeny. I mean, he's one of the biggest Celtics honks, you know, out there. I love the guy, but, you know, he bleeds Celtic green. He said the other day on Twitter, someone asked him, what do you grade Brad Stevens' performance on the year? And he said C-, D+. And I thought that was pretty telling for a guy that, you know, is as pro-Celtics as he is, to say that that Brad Stevens C-, D+ for the year. Do you agree with that, or what would you rank Brad? What would you grade Brad Stevens for this year?
I'm kind of with Stooley there. I'd say C+, B- right now. Looking at this year and this year alone, you know, he was an A+ up until this year. Somebody that maximized the talent that he had. Somebody that really got guys to play above their level, and somebody that, even going back to his first year here, that Celtics team that only won 25 games, they were a hell of a team to watch. They were pleasurable. They were enjoyable. They played the right way. And that was sort of some of the defining characteristics of all of Brad's teams. This year's team, they haven't been as enjoyable to watch. They haven't been as willing to play sort of above their level defensively. They haven't been a team that gives it their all night in and night out. They haven't been a team that's willing to play for each other night in and night out. And Brad's got to absorb some of that responsibility, whether it's fair or not. He's the head coach. This is the first year, Andrew, that he's had real expectations on his shoulders. And it's really the first year that he's been asked to coach legit NBA stars. And
can you finish the Paul Pierce story? So he pooped his pants. I didn't mean to interrupt you. I got to hear the rest of that.
So the rumor is that he pooped his pants, and he knew it. So he went down, and he called over Eddie Lassert, who was the Celtics trainer at the time. He told Eddie what was going on. They got the wheelchair out. And there is some slow-mo video available on YouTube where you can see the remnants of some brown stains in the back of his shorts. And there are NBA players quoted in this article saying that that's what happened. Whether this is just NBA folklore or not, I don't know. Paul will never admit it. The Celtics will never admit it. But it is certainly a story that every NBA player knows about.
Because I always thought it was a little embarrassing, him, like, hamming it up, the knee injury, and then coming out and hitting, like, four straight three-pointers. I don't know which is more embarrassing, the poop in the pants, or, like, you know, him kind of hamming up the knee injury and then coming out and looking like a dominant player, hitting four straight three-pointers.
It was a great moment, though, man. It was a hell of a moment. You know, so, yeah, I can't complain. Listen, I appreciate the phone call, man. I'm up against it here. It is Sports Radio, WEEI. My name is Patrick Gilroy. This is Late Night. You're driving home from the game tonight where finally we can sit here, we can say the Celtics, they played very well tonight, didn't they? The Celtics were pleasurable to watch tonight. They were the team that was the aggressor. They came from behind in the first half after falling behind by 11 points. This game early on looked like a game where Toronto was going to come in and flex their muscles. And we talked about this last night. If the Celtics coming off that miserable, abysmal, disgusting, inexcusable three-game losing streak to three teams that this team should be able to beat blindfolded, okay, that's the facts. They should be able to beat Miami, Orlando, and Brooklyn blindfolded, especially when you consider how well they played the previous four games leading up to that three-game road trip. When you put all those factors together, that three-game road trip, inexcusable, disgusting, every single negative adjective you want to use to describe what this team was in those three games. This was the antithesis of that. This was a total 180. This team, this performance, this effort looked awfully similar to the Celtics teams that we have come to know and love over the last few years under Brad Stevens. And I wonder, it's so frustrating. You know, Terry Rozier in the postgame tonight, you know, he was asked about the Celtics and why they play so much better when they play against these elite teams. And he said, I don't know. I don't have the answer. Maybe we need to play elite teams every night, which is, and he laughed and he joked. But I will say this, Celtics fans can take a little bit of optimism from that quote, because if this team can win enough games to get themselves home court in the playoffs, and that quote actually means something, they will be playing elite teams every night once the playoffs start. No longer are you worried about facing some of the mediocre teams and sisters of the poor in the NBA. And those teams are ultimately the ones that have cost the Celtics the ability to be a top-tier team in the Eastern Conference. You know, if they played even 70% of as well as they played tonight against those bottom 15 teams in the NBA that they continue to lose to, and continue to lose to simply in inexcusable ways, just not showing up, not putting forth the effort, not giving a you-know-what on a night-in and night-out basis. I said it last night, and I meant it, and I'll say it again. Those efforts from the Celtics in some of those games made them an embarrassment to the uniform. In some of those games, the lack of effort the Celtics put forth this year made them not worthy of wearing the Celtics uniform. And what is so maddening, so frustrating, and so hard to deal with is this team then showing up like they have now twice at home against the Raptors, like they have now twice against the Sixers, like they have now against Milwaukee, like they have against other elite playoff teams in the NBA. You know, that's what's so hard to accept about this team. The fact that they do have enough talent. They do have the right pieces to play really nice basketball. They do have the ability to go out there and be a 60-game winner and be a team that competes for a chance in the NBA Finals. The talent level is there. The player personnel is there. And I think that the head coach is there. I think. I'm not 100% sure on Brad Stevens this year. I'm just not. I need to see more. I want to see more. And I want to see Brad continue to succeed here this season. And if they go out and they have a spectacular second half of the season, well, then that's a big deal to me. It means that this team grew up in the first half of the season. We'll have to wait and see. But this game, as big as it was as far as their confidence level goes, and as big as it was as far as essentially breaking the losing streak and showing the rest of the league on national TV, on ESPN, that the Celtics are still a force to be reckoned with, for all those factors, that's great. But this game doesn't mean all that much in the grand scheme of things if ultimately all it is another false start, another tease, and another shining example of why this Celtics team ultimately is going to come up short. Because they don't want to put forth the effort every single night or even half of the nights that they go out there and play. That's been a problem. They've won a lot of games this year where they haven't put forth a good effort. They've won those games on talent alone. But when you try to play that way and you're the Boston Celtics and you don't have a LeBron James and you don't have a Kevin Durant, you don't have an Antetokounmpo, one of the top, you know, three guys in the NBA that can really carry a team all by himself, when you don't have one of those guys, you have to put forth the effort. So this game is either going to serve as the jump-off point for this team, the turning point, the game in which we look back at and say that is when the Celtics finally showed up this season, or we'll look back at a couple of weeks and say that game's just another example of what is wrong with the Boston Celtics. My name is Patrick Gilroy. This is Late Night right here on Sports Radio WEEI, and we come back here. This is some pretty good stuff we got here. So get this. LeBron James and Kyrie Irving, we know that their relationship has been, let's just say, call it strained. From friends to guys that won championship together, getting to multiple NBA finals, Kyrie Irving hitting the biggest three-pointer in the 2016 NBA finals, the biggest shot in the 2016 NBA finals. That duo looked like a duo that was going to be a force in the Eastern Conference for the foreseeable future. And then all of a sudden, that duo was no longer. And we heard about the issues, and we heard about the fact that Kyrie was hurt by the way that LeBron led that team, and by the way that LeBron chose to, quote-unquote, motivate Kyrie Irving, often belittling him, referring to him as his little brother. Everything that went wrong in that relationship that ultimately cost the Cavaliers their future. Well, you know, we've seen these two hug it out a couple of times on the court, and now we're hearing about a potential, I don't know, phone reunion between these two guys. We'll get all the details when we come back right here at Sports Radio WEI. It is Sports Radio WEI. It's late night. My name is Patrick Gilroy. Room for you guys tonight at 617-779-7937. You text the program at 37937. You find me on Twitter at Gilroy on Hoops, at Gilroy on Hoops. You're driving home from the game. You want to talk about what you guys just saw at the Garden as the Celtics, once again, the biggest tease in the association. They come away with a 117-108 victory against the mighty Raptors, a team that really has been dominant all season long in the Eastern Conference, a team that the Celtics have been chasing all season long, and a team that has been the antithesis of the Celtics all season long, a team that has come together, played very well together, despite the fact that there was major changes in that Raptors clubhouse, in that Raptors locker room. You know, the swapping out of DeMar DeRozan for Kawhi Leonard. You know, addition by subtraction with some other players there. Kyle Lowry really reinventing himself. You know, you talk about all these things, and I have to say that there was, how do I say this? There was hesitation on my part in belief that, my belief that a guy like Kawhi Leonard was going to be able to come back this year and play at this MVP level. I wasn't sure that he was going to do it because, quite frankly, last year he looked like a guy and sounded like a guy that didn't love the game of basketball enough to put forth this type of effort. I mean, when you quit on a team like the Spurs and you quit on a coach like Popovich, that generally sort of speaks more about you than it does the situation that you're in. All that being said, he has proven me and every other doubter wrong. He is a legit MVP candidate. He is probably the only guy not named LeBron that I can think of in the league right now that is capable of putting up 27 points a game as well as being, I don't know, one of the top two defenders in their conference. I mean, that's how ridiculous of a season this guy has had leading the Raptors. And the best part about the way that he's done it is other guys, a guy like Kyle Lowry, really established in the league for 10-plus years as a legit sort of secondary star. He knew his role, he carved out his role, and he was good at his role. And with the addition of a guy like Kawhi, it speaks volumes about the type of leadership that he brings to a team when a guy like Lowry, who's had a bit of an attitude problem throughout his career, is willing to adjust significantly his game for the betterment of the team. So this Raptors team has been a surprise all season long in the fact that they've been pretty infallible. They've been a team that's been difficult to beat. They really haven't had a down stretch this year. And they're a team that's been very consistent for the most part this year. And it's maddening to me that this Celtics team, once again, they prove that they're capable of beating some of the best, Philadelphia, Milwaukee, now this Toronto team twice. But they're also a team that goes out and they lose to the Magic in embarrassing fashion and lose to Brooklyn in embarrassing fashion with complete no-shows. But what's awesome about a win like this is this Celtics team, I've learned, tends to sort of have a big mouth when they feel good about themselves. Everybody starts talking a little bit more. And when guys start talking, they tend to say things maybe that they didn't plan to say and really plan to talk about. And tonight, Kyrie Irving was one of these guys that really, I mean, we all know that Kyrie loves some Kyrie Irving. And some of the quotes that he's given this year have been, let's just say, a little bit off the wall. But tonight, Kyrie got going. And he got going talking about LeBron James and Mark James from WEI and Nesson. He was there. And now Mark James, he joins us on the program on Late Night right now. Because, Mark, I guess you were front and center for Kyrie's comments tonight.
Yeah, Patrick, can you hear me?
Yeah, I got you, Mark.
Okay, good, great. Okay, yeah, I was right there. We couldn't believe it, man. You know, LeBron talked about what happened the other night in Orlando and how he completely messed up in airing grievances publicly. And he talked about how he realized that that what he did to LeBron when LeBron came back to Cleveland for the second time to try and win a title in the 2014-2015 season, and then Kyrie didn't want to adjust his game, and he understands. I guess he basically sort of had some introspection and self-reflection upon that, and you know, gave LeBron a call and said, "Hey, man, I'm sorry, and now I know what I did was wrong." And I thought it was also interesting, and I asked him about this too, Patrick, as a follow-up. I said, so a Lakers giving advice on how to be a better leader to a Celtic? He said, well, our relationship goes even much deeper than this rivalry. But when he mentioned LeBron, the media, we were just like a bunch of sharks in the ocean. And like Kyrie was just throwing chum like Roy Scheider and Jaws. It was awesome. It was great. And listen, Showtime, career high 18 assists tonight.
So that's my question for you, Mark, is do you think that maybe Kyrie took some of LeBron's advice and adjusted his game just enough? Because this tonight was the perfect Kyrie game where he's dominant offensively with 27 points, hitting the critical, crucial shots late in this game to really put the Celtics over the top. That's what you expect your premier players to do, your stars to do. But also, finally helping his teammates get involved and finally getting a guy like Al Horford easy shots at the basket, dunks, alley-oops, getting 24 points from him. Jason Tatum, 16 points. Gordon Hayward, there was a real effort to get Hayward involved in the first half. So it looked to me like Kyrie was out there not only being this dominant offensive player that we all know that he can be, but also making an effort to finally help his teammates shine in the way that they haven't done consistently this year.
Yeah, and he mentions, a good point too you bring up. I mean, this arguably could be Kyrie Irving's best all-around game as a Boston Celtic in a big game moment. Think about this. This is Toronto. They're the number one seed. They have, in my opinion, the MVP of the league this year in Kawhi Leonard. And Kyrie knew that he needed to change things up. And that's exactly what he did. And he wanted to get other people involved. And he even talked about, too, I asked him about his career high 18 assists. And he said, you know, most people think I can't pass the ball. He goes, but I, you know, basically was paraphrasing here. He takes a lot of pride in passing. And 27 points, 18 assists. Patrick, he scored more points as a Celtic before, but to have that, you're talking 27 and 18, that's a lot. And that shows. And then we, you know, some of the other media asked, like, what can we do? It all goes back to like the inconsistency of this team. Let's go back to the 4-game homestand. They won 4 in a row, culminating with that huge resounding victory over Victor Oladipo and the Pacers. Then they lose 3 in a row to garbage teams like the Heat, the Magic, and Brooklyn. Then they come back and they beat the team who was the best team in the East this season. It's like, which Celtics team is going to show up? We hope it's going to be the team you saw tonight against Toronto. However, you never know. I mean, yeah, I expect them to have a good performance Friday night against Mark. But then you hope that they just don't have a letdown against Atlanta. Well, you know, this is the Celtics team that's been the 2018-19 Celtics. They're bipolar, or Dr. Jekyll, Mr. Hyde.
They absolutely are, and that's been their biggest problem this year is this wild inconsistency. And we've talked quite a bit on Late Night, Mark, about this team having these sort of false starts, these false jump-off points. I can't tell you how many shows we've done this year where we said, okay, that was the game that's going to sort of turn the tide for the Celtics and really – their season will start now. We had the season starter, the season opener against Philly, where the Celtics get a win. You know, Philly did all this talking. The Celtics shut them up. You get off to the right start. You get the win over Milwaukee when Milwaukee was playing great. Now you've got the win over the Pacers, 2 wins at home this year over the Raptors, and then you have all these head scratchers in between. And then you think to yourself, well, the Celtics last year, they only lost 13 games on the road all season long. They've already racked up 13 road losses this year. But then you have a game like this, Mark, where, you know, Toronto, they're playing well enough. They're a team that does have, I think, as well, the MVP of the league right now. They're a team that's rolling. They're a team that's confident. And the Celtics, let's face it, their confidence level coming into tonight's game was visibly shaken following that final loss of that road trip in Brooklyn. And they come out tonight with this sort of resounding effort, and they come back from that early 11-point deficit. As a Celtics fan, you want to say, okay, this is it. This is finally this isn't a false start. This is for real. The Celtics will use this as a building block and play more consistent basketball for the rest of the season. But the fact is this, Mark, we're halfway through the year, and I still have no idea. I pride myself on knowing this team inside and out. And I couldn't tell you what this Celtics team will be over the course of the next week. I've got no idea.
It's a great point because here's the thing. Nobody does. I mean, I go back again, four-game homestand, four straight wins, three-game road trip, three straight losses, and they come back tonight and beat the team who's been, from the start of the season to now, the best team in the Eastern Conference and a team that looks like by far and away that they could be headed to the NBA Finals in June, not the Boston Celtics, which was heavily picked. But that being said, you hope that they've rectified the situation. As you mentioned, false starts. I hope this isn't another false start. And like I said, I expect them to come out Friday night. I expect them to have a stellar performance against Memphis before they head to Atlanta. You just hope there's not going to be a letdown against the Hawks, because this is the team that the Celtics don't get up for all season long. They've lost at home to the Knicks. They've lost at home to the Magic and on the road against the Magic. They've lost to really bad teams, and including Brooklyn the other night, not to mention the Suns at home, Patrick.
Right.
Remember that game? So we're talking that they've lost to some really bad teams, but maybe this is the turning point. Maybe this is what Kyrie needed. And I got to tell you, not to throw David Price under the bus, but the difference between Kyrie Irving and David Price is this. Kyrie Irving, when he makes a mistake and he messes up, which he came into the season out of shape, got called out by Tommy Heinsohn, Mr. Celtic. And you know what did he do, Patrick? He said, Tommy Heinsohn was right. I was out of shape. Tommy says it, and he called me out, and he right. David Price didn't do that with Eckersley. Then you look tonight, or what happened on Saturday night against Orlando. The thing that happened, calling out Gordon Hayward, showing up Brad Stevens, he calls LeBron after that. The guy, when he makes a mistake, he's recognizant and he's contrite, which is two adjectives that will never, ever be described of David Price. Now, David Price, guess what? He delivered in the postseason. He got the monkey off his back. He's holding the trump card now. But the difference is Kyrie Irving gets how to be a leader. Despite what David Price did, I don't think anybody will ever accuse him of being a leader. Kyrie's the leader of this team. As he goes, the Celtics go. Now we just hope this will be the team, and the effort we saw tonight, we'll see in Atlanta this weekend, and we'll see for the rest of the year.
Well, think about this, Mark. In all seriousness, when you talk about Kyrie Irving being a leader, yes, he's a 7-8 year veteran in the NBA. He's a guy that's got an NBA championship under his belt. He hit the biggest shot in the 2016 NBA Finals. You know, LeBron gets all the credit, but there is no championship for LeBron without Kyrie Irving. He's been to a couple of NBA Finals with the Cavaliers. And despite all of that, when you think about his career in the NBA, before LeBron, the Cavs were an abysmal team. When LeBron got there, LeBron was the clear-cut leader of that Cavaliers team. This is really the first year, the first time in Kyrie's career where he is the leader of a team that has legitimate finals expectations.
For the prohibitive Eastern Conference favorite going season, I mean, everybody knew the Warriors are going for 4 out of 5.
Right.
But it was sort of a mere formality that coming into the season that it was going to be the Celtics and Golden State in June, which is what it'll be next Saturday when Steph Curry and Boogie Cousins, who might be back by then, come to town.
Yep.
That could be the NBA Finals preview we're seeing. Now, Golden State, Patrick, they made a statement in a big way last night, dropping 51 in the first quarter on the road against a team who had the best record in the NBA, the Denver Nuggets, and they showed everybody, hey, listen, we might have been suffering from senioritis, but when we hit the cheat code button, we're still the best. We're the champs. Until anybody beats us, nobody's better than us. They showed that. So now they're back as the best team in the NBA. The Celtics don't have that. They don't, you know, there hasn't been any titles here since 2008, and you'd like to see one this season, but they just got to be consistent, and they got to stop having these lulls like we've seen time in. No more losses to teams like Brooklyn,
yep,
Phoenix, the Knicks in Orlando. No more.
It's Sports Radio WEI. It is Late Night. My name is Patrick Gilroy. Joining me on the line right now from WEI and also from Nesson. He covered the game tonight for Nesson is Mr. Mark with a C. James, Mark, before I get you out of here, the other guy I got to ask you about is Al Horford. He has a dominant performance tonight, 24-7, probably his most complete game of the season. Al's been sort of hampered and slowed a bit this year with a nagging knee injury that Brad Stevens and the Celtics have had to manage his minutes, sort of give him nights off that the Celtics really ultimately would like to see him play, but it's more important to keep him healthy and right the second half of the season going into the finals. We talked about Al quite a bit last night on Late Night because, you know, Merlone once again called him out on Twitter, and all of the Merlone followers really got on Al. I'll say this. The one thing that nobody's talked about is the fact that Al's been playing out of position for over a month now since Aaron Baines went down. Al's made it pretty clear in past years that, you know, he'll play the five because it's good for the team, but he's not comfortable as the full-time starting center. What happens tonight? Aaron Baines comes back. Only 14 minutes, but 14 good minutes. Gives the Celtics a legit presence in the paint, and suddenly Al Horford, going back to his natural four, has his best game of the year. So is that a coincidence, or is there something to my theory here that Aaron Baines helps make Al Horford the Al Horford that guys like Lou can live with?
Aaron Baines has been, when he was healthy, you know, before he got injured, has been one of the best pleasant surprises of the Celtics team all season. If you watched it, you can see what he does. And then how about tonight, Patrick? You talk about clutch. How about that three-pointer that he hit to tie the game up?
Yep.
I mean, this is a guy who's near 7 feet. And, hey, Horford's got stroke, too. But, you know, listen, Horford will be there. He's consistent. You know, I love Lou when he puts himself out there as, you got to own it. Lou's owned it. Hey, Patrick, I coined and copyright and trademark Phony Michelle. And you know what? He had 126 yards and three touchdowns on Sunday. I don't care. I'll double down on it.
Yep.
I'll double down on it because that was exactly – and it's not so much – and when I call him Phony Michelle, I know people think I'm cutting him up. It's not so much that I'm really dogging him as I am the pick of a running back in the first round when the Patriots need so much. So I'll double down on that. Yes, Al has looked average this season, but in big game scenarios, and you remember last year in the Eastern Conference Finals against LeBron James and the Cavaliers, I remember Al Horford throughout the playoffs last year, especially against Philadelphia. He was huge that entire postseason last year. He is what he is. He's got a year left, I believe, on his contract, around $30 million. And next year, more than likely, will be his last year with the Celtics.
Yeah, he's got a player option next year, yep.
Right. So who knows, but I will say, when Baines is back, Horford is better, and he's definitely happier, and Baines makes everybody better. The one thing, though, Patrick, I'll say is that, did you notice tonight when Toronto put in Ibaka, the Celtics had no answer for him? He seemed to do whatever he wanted, and it goes back to this, that you can go back to the Jay Crowder era. The Celtics still have issues when it comes to getting rebounds. They're not a great rebounding team. Last week during the Heat game on TNT, Barkley and Shaq both talked about how the Celtics don't have an intimidator, except a guy who's just rugged, a dog, other than Marcus Smart. And someone mentioned Horford, and Barkley and Shaq said, yeah, they're like 1.5, but they got to have dogs, man. They got to have guys underneath. And I don't know if Danny's going to make a deal. I don't know. I will also say this. I got to give kudos to two guys I've been highly critical of, and I think you have as well this year. I thought tonight when the Celtics got off to a lackluster start, I thought that Terry Rozier and Jaylen Brown came off the bench and provided a much-needed spark. Doesn't look like it in the box score, but trust me when I tell you, when they came in, they reinvigorated the team. Like, the Raptors went up by, I don't know what it was.
It was 11. It was the Raptors went up by 11 points at that point, and know what was happening. The Celtics came out to an aggressive start. They fell behind by 11, Mark, and all of a sudden they're hanging their heads again. They're not getting back on defense, turning the ball over. The moment those two guys came in, the energy level went dramatically up, and everything changed.
Everything, and they cut the Raptors' lead to 6 points at the end of the first quarter.
Yep.
So it ended up being 36-30, which, listen, you're talking at that point, you got 36 minutes of basketball left. So there's not like time was an issue, but I thought that they kept things going, and I thought those guys did a real good job. I just wish we could see the team that we saw tonight for all four quarters, but specifically the second, third, and fourth quarter. I just wish we could see this team bottled up, encapsulated, and come out every single game. I get it. 82 games is a grind, man. And especially, you know as well as I do, playing the Hawks, playing the Suns in Brooklyn, it's like, you know, it's a lot different when you're going on a date with, you know, Adriana Lima to going on a date with Melissa McCarthy, okay? You're not going to get up for the date with Melissa McCarthy as much as you would Adriana Lima. I get that. But guess what? Sometimes you got to get up for Melissa McCarthy.
You
okay?
do. You got to get up for Melissa McCarthy. You do. If only because her wallet is very, very large, Mark.
Right.
You know, she comes with her own set of benefits as well. You know, Mark, I got to appreciate you staying up late with me tonight. I know you've had a long, long day, work until midnight. So thanks for calling on your way home. And
no, Patrick, anytime you need me, man. It's always a pleasure. Great job out of you.
It's awesome. Love the Kyrie stuff. We'll talk to you real soon. There goes Mark James. I could keep him on the phone all night. I mean, I want to have a debate with Mark about his point about the rebounding. I really do. Because there's a reason why, going all the way back to the Jay Crowder era, the Celtics have struggled to rebound the basketball despite, you know, a complete essential change in their personnel. Right? You've got a very different team right now than you had back then. As a matter of fact, the final year of the Jay Crowder era here in Boston, led by Isaiah Thomas, featuring Jonas Jerebko, that team, they went to the Eastern Conference Finals and got absolutely waxed by the Cavaliers in five games. And what did Danny Ainge do at the end of that series? I mean, I've never really seen this before, where a Final Four team dismantles itself and 11 players out of 15 don't return. That is unheard of for a Final Four team in the NBA, but that's exactly what that Celtics team did, because that loss, the way the Celtics lost that series, told Danny Ainge everything he needed to know about that team's potential ceiling when it came to winning a championship. But the common denominator here is Brad Stevens. Brad does not rebounding is not all that important to Brad Stevens. Let's put it that way. He would like to at least break even in the rebounding battle, but he would rather send all five guys back defensively and not give up transition baskets than have a guy sort of hang back and try and fight for that rebound. Whether that's right or wrong, that's what Brad Stevens has sort of implemented here since day one, year one, when Jordan Crawford was leading the Celtics with 20 points a night. It is Sports Radio, WEI. It is Late Night. My name is Patrick Gilroy. Big thank you goes out to Mark with the C. James for joining us here live from the Garden following the Celtics 117-108 victory over the Raptors. Just one hell of a night. You're driving home from the game. We want to hear from you guys tonight at 617-779-7937.
It's a lot different when you're going on a date with, you know, Adriana Lima to going on a date with Melissa McCarthy, okay? You're not going to get up for the date with Melissa McCarthy as much as you would Adriana Lima. I get that. But guess what? Sometimes you got to get up for Melissa McCarthy.
You
okay?
do. You do have to get up for Melissa McCarthy. And as somebody who's been known to be a chubby chaser back in my day, I don't find her ugly either. Now, she's no Adriana Lima, but she's certainly somebody that, let's face it, you know, she's got her own qualities, that's all. It is Sports Radio, WEI. My name is Patrick Gilroy. This is Late Night. There is room for you guys tonight at 617-779-7937, talking about your Boston Celtics. As, quite frankly, this could either be, I don't know, their signature win that they've desperately needed this season. This could be their jump-off point, the time in which we look back at and say, that's the day, that's the game, that's the moment where the Celtics finally became the team that we thought that they could be. Or we could be sitting here a week from now saying, geez, what a tease. You know, it meant nothing, which is what we've been through the first 50% of this season. And that's been really difficult for me to deal with as a fan. It's been even more difficult for me to deal with as a sports talk radio show host, because I want to sit here and pretend to know what I'm talking about and tell you, guess what, guys? The Celtics, the way they started 2019 with the four consecutive wins, culminating with the win over the Pacers, just a total 48-minute effort. I wanted to believe that, you know what, finally it took this team a little while. Hayward was playing well. He had 35 points one night, then 16 and 11 the next night, and then just 14 and 6 the next night. But all three games, he was a guy that was competing out there, a guy that was a factor offensively, a guy that didn't look lost, a guy that looked like a legit NBA player. Then all of a sudden this road trip happens, and Gordon Hayward once again reverts to a guy that looks like he doesn't belong. The Celtics look like the disinterested bunch that we've seen so often this season, and defensively, forget about it. They looked like a team with zero defensive heart. I said it last night. I'll repeat it. I'm not ashamed of it. The way the Celtics played on that three-game road trip, they looked like a team that wasn't worthy of wearing the Celtics uniform. It was an embarrassment as a Celtics, as a lifelong Celtics fan, to know that that team, the way that that team had played on that road trip, was representing the larger sum that is the Boston Celtics, that goes well beyond the individual players on this year's particular roster. And then a night like tonight happens, and it reminds you about what this team could be. The same team that beat Philly, the same team that beat Toronto earlier this season, beat Milwaukee, beat the Pacers. The top teams, the premier teams in the conference, the Celtics, they've beat them. So is this a positive that the Celtics won this game tonight, or is it a negative overall that they only get up for the games that they consider big games. So it is Sports Radio, WEI. Let's get right back out to these phone calls. Let's go to John. John's in Maine. John, you're next up here on WEI.
Hey, Gilroy.
What's happening, Johnny?
Yeah, I think this is a jump-off game, and I'm really confident going forward. What we got from Terry Rozier is what, you know, I think it's what we need. What he provided on offense for us in the playoffs last year was great, but what he needs to do is just fall back into that lockdown defender that he can be and, you know, what he was for long stretches of the season last year. And Jaylen Brown was huge. And Kyrie had probably the best game of his career as a Celtic. You know, but that guy with the Paul Pierce call, Paul Pierce, you know, had a knack for coming up huge in really big games. And he was a bit of a thorn in LeBron's side. So, yeah, you know, Kyrie might be the best player we've had since Larry Bird, but you can't just.
I'm not putting him over Paul Pierce yet right now. And you know, people, if they want to sort of join in here, we had a caller a little while ago that essentially said that Kyrie is the best Celtic since Larry Bird. And that means that he's putting him over a guy like Paul Pierce, who's going to be a first ballot Hall of Famer. He's won a championship here with the Celtics. He was essentially a lifelong Celtic, with the exception of the final few years of his career. But really, looking back 20 years from now, nobody's going to remember Paul Pierce tearing it up in the playoffs for the Wizards. You know, that's going to be irrelevant. But Paul Pierce, you're right. He was a thorn in LeBron's side earlier on in LeBron's career, and he battled LeBron to the bitter end when LeBron was beating the Celtics with the Heat. And I got to tell you, Paul Pierce, to me anyways, his longevity, the way that he played the game, his ability to be so mature at a young age, I'll never forget him getting stabbed, nearly losing his life, and then not missing a game that season. You know, Paul Pierce, to me, he's legendary to this franchise, and I put him up there on the Mount Rushmore of great Celtics. Kyrie has the talent to eventually supersede Paul Pierce, but he's not there yet. He's only been here for, what, a little over a year, and he missed significant time last year. He's got a ways to go until he catches Paul Pierce, in my opinion.
Yeah, he's definitely not there yet, but for this Celtics team right now, I'm confident that they can still reach 50 wins. I think, what's that, 24-14, something like that. I think they can do it. They just got to keep playing, you know, cohesively like they did tonight.
So. It's a good point, man. And you say it's the jump-off point. So we'll see as this Celtics team, you know, they embark on these next handful of games. There's some good games in here. There's some games in which you think that this Celtics team, they'll get up for these games. They've been a dominant home team for the most part this year, now 11 games over 500 at the Garden. But there's also some stinkers in there, like the Atlanta Hawks on the road. The Celtics are 3 games under 500 on the road. They've lost as many road games this year through this point in the season as they did all year last year. And the mark of a good, mature, contending team is a team that can win on the road. The mark of an immature team that has still got a ways to go is a team that has an inability to win on the road. And that's what the Celtics are right now. They are not a mature team. They're not a finished product. There's still a lot more work to be done. It is Sports Radio, WEI. Let's grab one more here before the break. Let's go to Brian. Brian's in New Bedford. Brian, you're next up here on WEI.
Hey, Patrick. Love the show. How's it going?
Oh, it's another day in paradise. How are you, Brian?
Good after the win.
Yeah, it feels good. You know, after the week that we've had as Celtics fans, a win like this does feel good.
It does. When you're down in Orlando, you said you're going down there for the Magic game.
So I went down there to run the Disney Marathon that morning, and then that night, my buddies and I, we went to the game. I went to the game as a fan, not as media.
Oh, geez. Sorry about the loss, man.
Dude, and I knew it because the whole first half, I'm looking at my friends and I'm saying, they should be up 18. They should be up 20. They're allowing the Magic to hang around, and ultimately, that's exactly what happened. The Magic, they wanted it more, and it was embarrassing to watch the Celtics simply, like, not give a you-know-what in the second half of that game. They simply didn't care, Brian.
Yeah, that one was brutal.
Yep.
That was a brutal loss. But I want to get into actually the true center out there in Aaron Baines. I think that brought a huge difference to this team, really. And I think it's a key factor.
I agree with you 1,000%.
We have Williams out there, the rookie, but I don't think they could really obviously depend on him this year or really next year because he's still young and he's immature. So I really think they need to make a trade to get a true center. It doesn't have to really even have to be a big name, but I really do think that it plays into a part of the cohesiveness of this team, actually having a true center out there.
Well, you know, there's some guys that might become available. We can talk about it coming up a little bit later in the program that are interesting names. And the fact is this, when the Celtics brought in Aaron Baines, that name didn't excite anybody. Like, no Celtics fan jumped up out of their seats and said, yes, the Aaron Baines era, it is here. Let's start this thing. Let's win this thing. Banner 18, baby. But the fact is, Aaron Baines has been a signature Celtic in my mind, meaning he's put forth 1,000% effort each and every time that he's on the floor. He's always among the NBA's best defensive players, if not the best defensive big man in the league, per all the advanced statistics that all the geeks like these days. And the evidence is in the performance, not only of Aaron, but of Al Horford. And I'll say this before we go to break here. And people think I'm nuts when I say this. And I got absolutely eviscerated on the morning show last year for making this comparison. And I'm not saying that Al Horford is as talented, as good, or as impactful as Kevin Garnett. But Danny Ainge made the comparison between those two guys last year, the year before that. And if Danny Ainge thinks that there's similarities, then I can go with that because I trust Danny's the way that he views the game of basketball. All right. All that being said, when you go back to the Kevin Garnett days here in Boston, his first year here, he was the defensive player of the year. It was before he tore up the knee and he missed the second half of the 2009 season, which ultimately cost the Celtics their ability to be back-to-back champions. When KG came back from that, he needed Kendrick Perkins more than ever. Kendrick Perkins, when he was on the floor with KG, KG's advanced numbers, those advanced stats that the geeks like so much, proved out that he was still an elite defensive player, like top three, top four defensive player and best defensive power forward in the Eastern Conference. The moment Perk went down with an injury, and then the moment Perk got traded and never came back, KG's defensive numbers were in the toilet. When you have a legitimate seven-footer that takes up a lot of space, that can protect the rim, that can essentially take a lot of pressure off of your power forward defensively and make up for some of their deficiencies, make up for some of their sins by blocking a shot, by sliding over defensively, by being in the right position, by simply allowing Kevin Garnett to go back to his natural four instead of playing out of position at his unnatural five, Kendrick Perkins was really one of the biggest factors in Kevin Garnett's longevity here in Boston and the fact that he was still considered an elite defensive player in those latter stages of his career post-knee injury. Same thing here with Horford. Horford's 32 years old with a lot of miles on that body, battling a knee injury right now. So if you expect him to be the same sort of super athletic guy that he was with the Hawks, he's not that guy. Maybe he will be again at some point, but probably not until next year when he'll be 33 years old. You know, the Celtics have to manage this knee condition that he's got if he's going to be able to play in the playoffs. But when you've got a guy like Aaron Baines playing the natural five, it makes up for some of his deficiencies, and suddenly Horford looks a step faster. He looks more effective. He looks like a guy that's more engaged. None of those things are really true. He's not that much faster than he was two nights ago against Brooklyn. He's not suddenly more interested in winning right now than he was a couple of nights ago against Brooklyn. But when he slides over to his natural four and the Celtics have got a legit five on the floor sharing that front court space with him, guess what it does? All of a sudden, Al Horford looks like Al Horford again, just like Kendrick Perkins made KG continue to look like KG. The comparison is real. The numbers back it up. I don't care about your theories and the fact that you don't think that those two guys belong in the same sentence. The way they play, their impact on the court, and the way the Celtics run their offense through them tells you otherwise. It is Sports Radio, WEI. It is late night, 2 hours down, 2 hours to go. My name is Patrick Gilroy. Room for you when we come back at 617-779-7937.
I took a look at Baines in the shower.
We really need new phones.
T-Mobile will cover the cost of four amazing new iPhone 15s, and each line is only $25 a month.
New iPhone 15s? It's better
over here. Only at T-Mobile, get four iPhone 15s on us and four lines for $25 per line per month with eligible trade-in when you switch.
Minimum of 4 lines for $25 per line per month with auto pay discount using debit or bank account. $5 more per line without auto pay, plus taxes and fees. Phone fee at 24 monthly bill credits for well qualified customers. Contact us before canceling account to continue bill credits or credit stop and balance on required finance agreement due. $35 per line connection charge applies. See T-Mobile.com.